Well, good morning, everyone. How are we doing today? Good. Live alert awake, enthusiastic. What's that? Yeah. Well, let's open up to the book of Revelation. Just a couple minutes here of review. We spent the majority of class doing a quick overview of the seven churches in Asia that the original letter was written to, Ephesus, Smyrna, and Pergamum in chapter 2, and Thyatira. And then in chapter 3, Sardis, Philadelphia, and Laodicea. Not sure if anyone actually did it, but if you were able to take every one of those letters, those seven, and put them side by side, they all follow a similar format. You know, you got like an introduction, a description of Jesus, a description of the church, a praise, a rebuke, very similar language. Philadelphia, and in chapter 3, and Smyrna in chapter 2 are the only two that are not openly rebuked, where Jesus says, you know, this I have against you, which he says to so many of the others. And then the rest are kind of generally praised and then heavily rebuked. A couple of them, I'd be, you know, like Sardis in the beginning of chapter 3. He says, I know your deeds, that you have a name, that you are alive, but you are dead. I'm not really sure I see the praise in anywhere in this section, you know. He starts by saying you're alive, but you're actually just walking dead, sleepwalking. So we got an introduction to these areas. And, you know, there's a lot you can really learn about why these areas are picked, why they struggled the way that they struggled, geographically, politically, economically. A lot of these places, booming trade areas, lots of merchants and merchandise coming in and out, lots of idol worship, things of that nature. And maybe in our study through Revelation a year or two down the road, we can, you know, dig into some of those details. But there's an introduction to those churches. So that's primarily what we covered last week. wanted to spend a little bit of time just talking about the enemies of the church that are brought forth in this book. So if we remember the general theme of the book of Revelation, it is the victory of Jesus in the church over Satan in this great spiritual battle. So, you know, reading through it, maybe the first couple times, maybe that thought creeps in, you know, I get a lot out of Ephesians. You know, I really can apply a lot of stuff out of James. Why did God give the church the book of Revelation? I mean, half of it, you read through it and you're like, what is that even talking about? So hopefully up to this point, we've seen that it's a very practical book and a very important book in the sense that we need the reminder that we win this spiritual battle, because when we look out to the world, it does appear like evil's winning the fight, okay? And so the book of Revelation assures us, it identifies the evil, it identifies the sources of these wickedness, it identifies the persecution that's going to come at their hands, and then it reminds us in the end that the Lamb and His bride win. So, really important. So, in that sense, that's how the book of Revelation is playing out. And it's this story that's playing out. The first 11 chapters kind of a little more focused on the church versus evil, and then the latter chapters focused on Jesus' victory over the dragon himself. So let's look at the enemies that are brought forth here. Let's go to chapter 12. Revelation chapter 12, verse 3. Then another sign appeared in heaven, and behold, a great red dragon. bag. A great red dragon having 7 heads and 10 horns, and on his head were 7 diadems. So here's a fella, a red dragon. Any idea who that is? It is Satan. But pop quiz, from the verse I read, you can't prove that, right? There is a verse in this chapter that does establish for us right away that it is Satan. Does anybody know where that one is? 5, 4. It is verse 9. Yep. Verse 9, the great dragon was thrown down, the serpent of old. Hey, who was the serpent in Genesis? Okay. Who is called the devil and Satan, who deceives the whole world. That's how he gets his name. He was thrown down to the earth, and his angels were thrown down with him. So, might be worth doing, you know, maybe even an overview of chapter 12 itself. It's a very practical chapter. I think it really sums up everything I said in the beginning, that we're up against evil, but that the church is going to win in the end. Chapter 12 really encapsulates that vision. Could maybe do that if we stretch this out another week. We'll see. So there's our first character, evil character. It's Satan himself, and so he's described as the red dragon. Chapter 13, verse 1. The dragon stood on the sand of the seashore. Then I saw a beast coming up out of the sea. So this is a different character. This is a beast coming up out of the sea, having 10 horns, 7 heads, and on his horns were 10 diadems, and on his head were blasphemous names. Pause there for just a quick second. We will keep reading. Anybody from the Old Testament tell me what the sea typically, and we'll hit these verses. Anybody off the top of their head, what does a reference to the sea or something coming from the sea typically mean in the Old Testament? Does anybody? Kate? Jared, what'd you say? Government. Yeah, government power. Okay. I mean, it could be as big as the sea or something as the great mighty river. Okay. When you read the great mighty river in the Old Testament, what river is it referring to? The Euphrates. Okay, and it's always a reference to a great worldly power. But this great worldly power typically overflows its banks to destroy and not to water the land to make it fertile. So that's our first clue. So then, question number 2, after we read here in verse 2 and on. And the beast which I saw was like a leopard, and his feet were like those of a bear, and his mouth like the mouth of a lion. And the dragon gave him his power and his throne and great authority. So, what? Okay. Can you guys think of an Old Testament passage that talks about in the context of world authority? You could say government, right? Because it's coming up out of the sea, with the depiction of a leopard, bear, and lion. Do we remember this? What's that? Nebi, which means now we're in Babylon, which means we're in the book of Daniel. So in Daniel chapter 2, many of us remember there's this disturbing dream that the king has, and it's a dream of a great statue, right? Head of gold, right? Arms and chest of silver, belly and thigh of bronze, legs of iron, feet iron mixed with pottery, and then God's kingdom, which is represented, and it's God's kingdom because it's eternal, Daniel says, and it's God's kingdom because it's a rock cut out of the mountain without hands, so it's a divine rock. And then it crushes the statue at its feet, destroys world power, right? And then grows into a mountain that covers the whole earth. And we're like, hey, yeah, we know that one. Well, it's just a few chapters later that same story unfolds again, only Babylon, Assyria, Persia, Greece, Rome, they're described by critters. different animals. And I actually had this preaching topic at Peaks a couple years ago. Now, you go back to Daniel. Now, this is an overview, so I'm going to keep moving because I just want to introduce you to these characters. But you go back to Daniel, the beast coming out of the sea in the book of Revelation, chapter 13, is like a composite sketch of all the beasts from Daniel. So to me, it couldn't be more clearer of a picture that the beast that the devil is giving his power to and then is rising up to wage war against good is the influence that he has through world powers and world authority. And you know, that's why we've had totalitarianism governments and communism and all these things over the years, because people get to the top and then they get power. And where men get power, then they corrupt, because then they want to use that power for themselves. So then they're willing to starve their people or destroy their people in order to increase their wealth, expanse, and empire. So God, you know, well, Satan uses that. So just want us to see that there. So, and in case we missed it, the end of verse 2, and the dragon gave him his power and his throne and great authority. So, big picture, what's important here is the beast coming out of the sea is not the dragon. Okay, it's a different beast, but it's an avenue in which the devil uses to wage war against God. And it looks like he's doing that through world authority, power, governments, whatever that form may take. And it's pretty easy to come to that conclusion because he comes from the sea. We'll hit a verse for that. And then it's really a composite sketch of all those world empires from Daniel. Brobrat. Thanks, Bro Brad. Okay, let me see. I want to hit one more verse here. Let's go to Isaiah. Again, you could probably find a half dozen places. Let's go Isaiah. Isaiah 17. Okay, this is God's oracle, pronouncement of judgment against Damascus. And then down in verse 12, he says, "Alas, the uproar of many peoples who roar like the roaring of the seas, and the rumbling of the nations who rush on like the rumbling of mighty waters. The nations rumble on like rumblings of many waters. He will rebuke them, and they will flee far away and be chased like chaff in the mountains before the wind, or like whirling dust before a gale." So just one quick example of the sea representing the nations. So I think that's good there. Any other thoughts or comments on the beast from the sea? I forget what they're called, but the people who can make the puppets move with the strings. Okay, you guys know what that is. So I can't pronounce that. Just picture Satan up here, and on the bottom of his string is the beast of the sea. And that's what he's doing. Okay? He's got another one over here. Let's meet this character. Back to Revelation. Same chapter, chapter 13. A pressure cooker. Couldn't figure out what that was. Revelation 13, verse 11. "Then I saw another beast coming up out of the earth, and he had two horns like a lamb, and he spoke as a dragon." That's our first sign. That's no good. "He exercises all the authority of the first beast in his presence, and he makes the earth and those who dwell in it to worship the first beast, whose fatal wound was healed. He performs great signs so that he may make fire come out down from heaven to the earth in the presence of men, and deceives those who dwell on the earth because of the signs which were given him to perform in the presence of the beast, telling those who dwell on the earth to make an image to the beast who had the wound of the sword and has come to life. So you read this and you see that the second beast, he looks like a lamb but speaks like a dragon. What's the first thing? Because it's not a dragon speaking lamb, right? It's symbolic. So what do you learn from something that looks cute, cuddly, and furry, and harmless on the outside, but breathes fireballs? I always think of a wolf in sheep's clothing, you know? But on the outside, it's cute and cuddly, but on the inside, it has what it needs to destroy, right? And then, okay, and then deceive. Deceive, deceive is the word that keeps popping up here, right? So this beast doesn't come in with the authority of world power. It just comes in and it deceives. And it points people to the first beast. And it says, make images. Make images to the first beast. What does that sound like? Idolatry, doesn't it? Yeah. So if we jump on over to chapter 19... Okay, 19:19. I love how 19 starts. Hallelujah, salvation and glory and power belong to our God. Okay, we win. Chapter 19, verse 19. I saw the beast and the kings of the earth. I wonder why the kings are there with their armies. Okay, maybe because it's world power. Assembled to make war against him who sat on the horse and against his army. And the beast was seized, and with him the false prophet, who performed the signs in his presence by which he deceived those who received the mark of the beast, those who worshipped his image, idolatry. These two were thrown alive into the lake of fire, which burns with brimstone. So Jesus is riding on his horse victorious in this spiritual battle. And so he's rounding up all of Satan's agents and putting them down because as the chapter starts, power to our God. Okay? And then the second beast just gets straight up called the false prophet. So that's who the second beast is. The cuddly lamb. That when you get close enough to him, he can speak like a dragon. And although Revelation doesn't say it, I always like to picture maybe, cooking people with fire. Because that's what dragons can do, right? Because he lets you get close because he seems harmless and then he just kills. And that's false teaching. That's false doctrine. That's the false prophet right there. Okay? On many hands, I'm thankful for the internet. On other hands, I'm not. Largely for our kids, the internet and social media is destroying our younger generations. You cannot change my mind. But I saw this video of this mega, mega big church. And I'm not saying that to its shame. I'm just saying this auditorium was huge. And so the big screens had to have been, they had to have been, the TVs that they had in this place had to have been as big as this. And they had what looked like a above ground pool, probably about this big from here to the wall and from the chairs, probably about this big, right? And the whole assembly lined up, and they were just baptizing themselves. And so the preacher's, speaking in the background and the band's going and these people they're just jumping in. But the first one wasn't enough, so they would go. And they were just like, it was just this, it was like a rock concert, but with people jumping in a pool, So instead of the mosh pit, they were just, I don't even know where to start, DIY baptism is what I called it. That's a lamb, though. that speaks like a dragon. Right? Because the buildings have crosses. And the preacher's calling on the name of Jesus, right? And on the outside, it looks like a lamb. But really, it's destructive. So, Rainey, did you have a comment?
It's just interesting, in contrast to governments coming up out of the water, Satan was banished to the dust of the earth in Genesis chapter 3, and it says in, God said, "In on your belly you will go all the days of your life, and I will put enmity between you and the woman, and between your seed and her seed." Well, of course, Satan's seed is lies, her seed is truth. The enmity is hostility in the difference between the two.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what we're witnessing today, is evil is narcissistic. Mm-hmm. So it creates the lie, blames the lie on you, makes you get the counseling for not believing their lie, and then they give you the bill.
Yeah. Yeah, that's an excellent point. And so, you know, you've got quite a bit of political and religious conflict always going on across the world. Particularly, there seems to be never-ending wars in the Middle East. And what's interesting to me is people fleeing Muslim countries come to Christian countries. You know, why is that? Is it because the Muslim countries are so accepting? Okay. So, you know, it's interesting to me that Christianity is the one that's under attack, right? And that's because it's the seed of truth. And Satan's just happy if you're close, but just off a little bit. So, you know, that's why if your post goes up on Facebook or you say something, you know, it's like this football player that thanked God after winning the playoff game, and then the news network just cut it out in their posting of it, you know. And they got a lot of trouble for that because, you know, people said, well, that's not right. But, you know, if he goes on there praising Allah or something, or calling on his, you know, Hindu God or, you know, whatever it may be, you know, they don't cut it out. Because there's two, and evil is, and that's a good picture for, you know, what we're studying here. So I think that's all I'm going to say there. So you've got the devil, who's the great dragon, serpent of old, Satan and the devil, the one who deceives. And he's got, you know, in the picture, he's got a couple. I'm going to throw a third one in here, I think. But for now, we've got kind of how he's really channeling a lot of his influence. So he's going to use the armies and the kings and the authority of power in order to promote his agenda, and then he's also going to use false teaching as well. Well, so again, like, you read through this and you're like, man, what is going on here? What is this? What is this? And then you start to really dig into it, bring out the Old Testament. You can see why after we finish Daniel, we got to go through Revelation, right? Hopefully you've seen that today. Now it's really making sense. Like, that's really what God, that's really what, you know, Satan has done, is he just, like, chops people's heads off, or he just gets them to quietly think they believe in God, but they're not actually in accordance with the truth. So that's what Satan's doing. So let's introduce another one here, a couple verses, but we'll just go to chapter 17. I wasn't planning on it. Do you have a comment? I'll get your comment here. I'm just introducing us to the characters in the war, so if you've got something you want to add here, that's good too.
Well, you started off about things being figurative,
yeah,
or symbolic or literal when you started it. And so on the end of 13 there, I'm wondering about the buying and selling. So I understand, you know, a mark on their hands or their head, that could be figurative, you know, words, deeds, and thoughts type of thing, actions. But how do you make the jump whether those people have a spiritual mark or symbolic mark to buying and selling? So it seems like it's a test. And so that seems like that's physical there to me anyway. And so I wanted to know your thoughts on that, if that's symbolic language, the end of Revelation 13, or is that, you know, physical?
So When I look at that, you know, we understand that the book is symbolic, right? But that doesn't mean that it's not going to play itself out in a way where there's not physical limitations, right? So, for instance, sin enters the garden. That's a spiritual problem, right? But then destruction through sin comes, and then you get death and disease. That's a physical ramification for a spiritual problem, right? So, in a quick answer, when I read the end of that, we know the mark is spiritual. Okay, you have those who belong to God and those who do not belong to God. So we don't have to be looking for a certain mark or a certain chip or a certain whatever it may be. But what's being communicated there is because we have the name of God on our forehead, we are going to be persecuted by the world. Now, is that literally going to be fulfilled, that like our bank accounts get shut down? I don't know if that's what it's saying. I just know that it's saying that it's going to be difficult because you're following God. And that's all the most I've ever pulled out of that from my perspective. So any other thoughts or comments on that? Which is fine. So
I would just hearken back to the, be fruitful and, you know, sin, the spiritual, the things that are spiritual and either good or bad will play out and manifest physically. And that's why God says, check the fruit.
Yeah, because the book is highly symbolic, I am hesitant to take a section and then to whittle it down to, okay, there's going to be a way to keep Christians from being able to spend money in the marketplace. Now, I'm not saying that can't happen, okay, but the point is that it's going to be difficult for us. So in another different example, kind of related, could Satan, through his influence, find a way that those who have the mark of God can no longer assemble? Could he, in public? Can Satan do that? So I see that in the same line there as what's being communicated, is that because we're of God, it's Satan's agenda to shut us down. And if that's to keep us from being able to spend, if that's to keep us from being able to spread the gospel, if that's from keeping us from being able to assemble, he's going to use all of those avenues. So, yeah. Well, I'm really sore from my workout, so I actually need this to keep moving, so I appreciate it.
Okay, so what I'm going to say next may or may not blow your mind, I don't know. But if you take the concept of the prince of the power of the air, now you may not believe in electricity. You can't see electricity. But there's a consequence if you disobey and you are the grounding factor with the flow of electricity. So if we got the prince of the power of the air, you can't see him, but you see all kinds of results of that. Why is it such a stretch to understand physical currency for an exchange of goods and services that's replaced the tally stick on keeping an account to digitizing via electricity your purchases? So now you have an electronic wallet where you can be punished if you do not say the right things or you do not accept your carbon tax, or you used up your credit by traveling in an airplane 10 times, so you're penalized, so your behavior is guided into a certain way. So that might seem like that's almost Amish, but I don't think that I should get rid of my radio set because I can operate it, because the radio set in and of itself is not the evil thing, it's what's going over. And to bring your comment about things in the future and images, back in 1964, they had the Directors Guild standards, and they didn't take the Lord's name in vain, and they'll show you on the TV with Cary Grant and Doris Day in two separate beds. What they were trying to do was illustrate the ridiculousness of a man and woman sleeping in a room together. Now, me personally, as I've grown older, I think that's an advantage, sleeping separate. Saves the marriage, especially if one doesn't move and one's moving. But what I'm trying to explain is that I personally believe that is literal. That is. Now, I want to tell you why. I have had a spiritual experience when I can buy a car back half a book. I can have a spiritual experience right now having buy 90% silver without a double premium on it. I would be elated. I would feel so much joy. But I can't do that because that's not where the market's at. So buying and selling looked at as a way of controlling people when you don't want people or when people don't want to be controlled. So that is why I think that takes warranted discussion, because you have a penalty if that is literal. Right back to your chapter 19. Mm-hmm. You go the same place with all those other guys. So you can be a friend of the world and an enemy of God, or you can be a friend of God and an enemy to the world. But it's coming, big time coming.
And the last part there, can you explain that to me? I followed you all the way up to the end.
Being a friend of God?
Chapter 19, the application of chapter 19.
All those who believe the image and the prophets and everything they did and they believe the signs and joined them, mm-hmm. they are reserved for the lake of fire, those people that followed that.
Right.
So those people, like you and I, that did not obey the gospel, are following all those angels to the place that we don't want to go. So it's very imperative that we have a handle on money. It's in our Constitution. Everything they're doing is breaking down the Constitution. People have got to understand the United States of America is unique. And everybody that thinks they're going to get their debt forgiven, think about it. If you got a guy that's weighing you down on debt, the only thing that doesn't get discharged in a bankruptcy on a Chapter 11 with a bank is all the mortgages that they hold, because those are considered assets, not liabilities. Your deposits in the bank are considered a liability, and they can be discharged.
Of course.
They don't owe you anything. Mm-hmm. So everything that was rectified in the 30s has been destroyed and papered over that allows them to do the same thing again. And I can see a big setup here. Mm-hmm. And maybe it lasts to 2029. I don't know, but maybe.
Yeah, so let's imagine a scenario where, let's imagine a scenario where currency goes digital, okay? I think that's bad, because you've seen a push for globalization, right? So the pandemic to me wasn't the biggest surprise to me during the pandemic was the global response to the pandemic. I don't think that we've ever seen anything like that in the world before. Now, through travel and technology, we're more globalized than we've ever been before. So maybe that's the reason why we haven't seen it in our history to that extent. But I gotta tell you, because I had a one-day-old baby on March 14th, and we're being discharged, and the world shuts down that very next day. And my family's trying to figure out, is there actually a disease going around that can kill people? And my one-day-old baby probably has a compromised immune system. That could be scary. And even in the midst of that, the thing that actually caught me off guard the most was how every country in this world just followed suit. Fold, 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 fold. All the narratives, I was like, whoa. That gave me chills. I got the one-day-old baby. I'm not worried she's going to die. What's worrying me is like, whoa. Okay? So you get one-world languages. You get world health organizations. You one-world everything. Well, yeah, you're going to need a one-world currency in order to do that. It doesn't look like it's going to be the dollar, does it? That's why they're destroying the American dollar. So they can usher in the digital currency. So now, okay, now you've got a digital currency with electricity. I like how you said that. Okay? Would it be really easy for them to say, okay, you believe this? Pick an easy one, a less intrusive one. Okay, you believe there's only one way to God? Okay? Click, you're shut down. Do I think that that is a way that the end of Revelation 13 is being fulfilled? Absolutely. I just don't go the extra step, and I'm not saying you are. I'm not saying it's only limited to that, because it's symbolic. So because it says buying and selling, I can see them shutting down our ability to assemble. is because we don't have the mark of the devil. They're not shutting us down, right? They're not shutting them down. That we don't have the mark of the devil, so they're not shutting them down. They're shutting us down. Does that make sense? So that's, well, yeah. I mean, you want to take control of a people, and you do that, you could shut Christianity and Christians up pretty quick if that's how it goes down. I'm not convinced that's how it's going to go down, but there's a lot of signs, and I've even reiterated some of them now. It's like, hey, why is the American dollar being destroyed? You know, do you think everyone knows it's happening, right? We can see it right in front of us. And like, you think our country's like, yeah, I got a really good idea. How about we destroy our own currency? Well, that's because it's not the people in charge of this country that want to destroy it. It's the people who want the world power that want it to go down. Okay? So, yeah, you see lots of signs going that way. But because Revelation is symbolic, any avenue that Satan uses to shut down Christians because they have God's mark, I believe falls into that. So it took up the last half of our class, so I know Schaefer's been sitting on something. If anybody, oh, you did have your hand up, Rayden. That's right. I thought I saw a hand, and okay.
I don't want to go down Mark's road, although it's all valid. The one thing that's prevalent right now is the term Christian nationalism. Oh. And so in order to do what Mark's talking about, you know, Christian nationalism has to be one of the next stones in the road that they're trying to take everybody down. So anyway, I would look into that. I really think that, you know, our Declaration of Independence makes us unique as far as other world governments and our Constitution. So, and that's why, you know, it's our duty to preserve the things that God's called us to do.
Yeah, it is. So they held the Iowa caucus, right? And Trump wins in a landslide. And now the polls are starting to come out, and 15% of people who voted for Biden 4 years ago are undecided now. Okay, whereas I think 3% of people who voted for Trump 4 years ago are undecided. So the polls are starting to not look good for Biden. So a liberal news network gets on there, on the air after after the Iowa caucus and says, well, hold on, everybody. Let's not be so worried that Trump's gaining steam. Just remember, that's a bunch of white Christian voters in Iowa. I mean, like, just you turn on your TV and millions of... This isn't some, like, crazy social media website. I mean, this is just on national television. You're like, okay. You know, I mean, what if we substituted white for brown and Christian for, you know, whatever other religion you want, and then you said that on the TV? Wouldn't that be crazy? But that's not where it gets scary, because now, any time I get these clips or these things sent to me from the liberal news networks, It is white Christian nationalists that are going to destroy this country, which is really interesting, because you're a Christian and you love your country, and that's all it takes to be a Christian nationalist. That's it. And if you do, so you got to understand this does make sense in the context of the spiritual battle. So that's how I'll kind of tie this in. God is love, yes. We know love by this, that he laid down his life for us. And so we are to love as God loves and to walk in his love, the book of Ephesians says. But yet the devil, with his world powers, his false prophets, will have to meet the harlot later. Okay? And through those avenues, Satan is still the prince and power of the air, as he has been from the beginning, and he is twisting all of those things, and he has taken God as love and has now communicated as love is love. So you got to understand that the battle is between good and evil, and that's what this book is teaching. Okay? So to shut down America, to destroy her currency, and to remove the last shred of Christianity that this nation has, to destroy it, America stands in the way of world globalization. It's just the ultimate problem for them. Okay, we still talk about freedom to a degree, you know, religious freedom. We still talk about being a Christian nation. We, you know, the other countries just, I mean, Europe, I mean, they're just like, nope, no God. Okay, your Asian, you know, your most of your Asian countries are either Hindu, Muslim, or atheist. So that's, you see, Christianity is the one that's under attack. So for America to go down, they've got to label the God-believing, you know, country-supporting person as the enemy. But again, why are they targeting the Christian, right? Because the battle's between truth and lies, evil and good, and that's what's going on there. So hopefully, Mark, I covered that. If anything, my take on that. And yeah, so it's top of the hour. We'll break here, and then we'll finish next week. Thanks, guys.